Ladies and gentlemen, this is the World Series of Politics, where Brendan Bussman and Brant Iden race through the turn on key legislative and regulatory developments around the gaming world. As these two come up to the green flag, let's get into this race for expansion and opportunity for the industry to grow until we hit the checkered flag on another episode of the World Series of Politics.
Welcome back to the World Series of Politics podcast. I'm your host, Brant Iden, along with my good friend, Brendan Bussman. And I got to do it, horse joke, we are galloping along in this episode.
Brendan, yeah, how are you, my friend? We are going to gallop along. I was expecting the riders up at the start.
Nah, that also would have been a good one. I got a plenty of horse jokes I could throw in here.
No, I know. There's plenty that we can go to. But it's great to be back on the show with you, Brant, and I happen to once again be in Las Vegas today. I will tell you, though, the next time we record, I will probably be at least in one of three locations internationally. I just don't know which one.
Well, I'm hoping for a big opener. I mean, you promised me when I did the opening from the Grand Canyon, you'd give me a big opener.
I've got Macau coming up, and I've got UAE coming up. I've got the UAE one planned. I don't have the Macau one planned yet, but I'll figure that out. Macau's first before UAE.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Give our listeners something to look forward to. The big opening from the UAE.
Yes, the big opening.
Well, I gave this episode away a little bit. I will tell you what. In the years we've been doing this, we have never had an episode. This is the World Series of Politics. We talk about gaming. We talk about gaming across the world. We've never had a show on horse racing. And I was, so this all came to me, you know, an epiphany as I was at the Kentucky Derby, of course, in my Kentucky Derby shirt today. And I'm like, how have we never done a show on horse racing before? And I happen to run into my new friend, and thank goodness he's on the show. I appreciate it. Jonathan Kinchin, otherwise known as JK, you know, horse handicapper, professional, Fox Sports commentator, podcaster, everything we need to know about horses. And Jonathan said to me, Brant, sure, I'll come on the show. And I said, man, that would be fantastic because I know nothing about this industry, judging by the fact that last weekend I donated to Kentucky Education. And it was good. I did a lot of good for the Kentucky economy by my donations because I didn't have any horses hit the board. So there you go.
Louisville appreciates it, Brant. They always do. No different than we appreciate your tax dollars in Las Vegas.
That's right. I like to contribute.
Yeah.
JK, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
No, I appreciate it. And actually, you didn't necessarily donate to the Louisville or the Kentucky Education. You donated to me, one of the things about our great sports, a paramutual game. I walked away a winner.
Very true.
If you walked away a loser, then quite technically, you're going to buy me dinner tonight. I appreciate it.
Hey, and I'm happy to do it, man. There you go. I love that. Well, hey, so let's jump right in. You know, as I said, we've not had a show on horse racing before. Give us a little bit of, obviously, your background. You're very experienced in this. Tell us a little bit about sort of where the state of the industry is today and sort of what you're seeing out there. Of course, everybody talks about the Triple Crown, but horse racing goes on throughout the year, and there's a lot of action out there.
Yeah, I mean, from your audience, from a gaming perspective, I think that horse racing's got a lot of good, and we've made a lot of mistakes along the way. We basically have the online gambling market cornered forever with the ability to play online. And we were kind of late to the party a little bit of taking advantage of that. And then sports books came in and kind of swooped us in terms of us having that monopoly for you know, over 30 years. I would say the state of the game is that while we're seeing an increase in handle, there was more viewers than we've ever seen for the Kentucky Derby since 1991, not ever, since 1991. You know, things are trending in the right direction. I think the Netflix show has been very well received from a lot of people in a similar way that the F1 show was received, and it's produced by the same company, Box to Box. The one thing I'll say about horse racing that we have above a lot of other gaming is, like I said, we're a parimutuel game. So there's still an opportunity. If you're sharp, you can really monetize your sharpness. Even if you're sharp against the sports books or the casino, your returns can be a little limited in terms of what you can kind of take out of the pool there, because it's designed that way. They don't build those beautiful casinos in Macau and the UAE, or not the UAE, but in Macau, because it's an easy game to win. So that's one thing that we have from a gaming standpoint. The obstacles that we have from a gaming standpoint, I think, is our takeout is significantly higher. The cost of a wager is higher than many other gambling, if not all other gambling sports. Now, if you're a professional, the way that you kind of work around that is you get really good and then you work out a rebate where now you can get a little bit closer to a much more manageable type of cost of wager. But for the average player, for a someone or a new player, the 160,000 people that showed up to Kentucky Derby Day, they don't have a great shot on the day with the base knowledge that they have. While other gaming aspects, I think, they do have a shot. So that's kind of the overview of the sport. There's obviously the unfortunate misconceptions that come along with the sport that really are pretty dated. These animals are treated better than my dog, and he sleeps in between me and my wife every night. So it's there's bad apples everywhere, but I love the game. And the last thing I'll say about racing that we have from a gaming standpoint that I think a lot of other people don't have is that it's fun to go to a racing event if you're not wagering and you have zero interest in the sport. For instance, you can bring your mother, you can bring a wife, you can bring a 12-year-old. They get to get dressed up, they get to see the beautiful horses, the colors. It's exciting. You're outside. We have that advantage. I dare you to bring your wife to watch you play in a poker tournament for 2 days. She's probably not going to like that too much.
No, and as you talk about that, I'm reminded of a time I went down to I was down in Kentucky for a conference, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, they're racing over at Keeneland today. Do we want to head over?" It was a Friday afternoon. It was a great and beautiful day, and the entire crowd was filled with fraternity and sorority people from the University of Kentucky that were just out for the afternoon having a good day. And they're absolutely right as you talk about that, going, it's one of those sports that you can have that experience. And it's not sitting there, as you just said, having your spouse or significant other watch you play poker for 2 days. That may be the case over there. What, since everybody talks about racing, especially as it comes around the Derby and as we head into the Preakness and the rest of, what we won't see this year in a Triple Crown, unfortunately. But how does that elevate the sport, and what can they, what can the industry do to sort of, harness this as it heads into the rest of the year?
Well, I think that you could argue, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think of all sports outside of maybe the Super Bowl, but it's so popular, I don't think it even really counts. I think we do the best job of grabbing everyone's attention for one day of any sport. Whether you're interested in it or not, we grab their attention for one day. I think the problem we have is retaining their attention throughout the rest of the year. And I think that comes from a couple of different places. Like I said before, the barrier to entry for wagering on horses is a lot harder. The information's a lot harder, right? It's not like tonight you get to just decide if you're going to take the Thunder or you're not going to take the Thunder. And by the way, the Thunder start with being down 9 points. That's pretty easy to explain to someone. And when they get beat, they understand why they got beat. It's a coin flip, essentially. Our game's not that easy. The data is not that easy, right? If you want to dive deep and model horse racing, you're going to have to pay for that data. That data is not easily and freely available. It's another obstacle that we have that other sports have figured out that we haven't quite figured out. So when someone comes to the Derby for the first time, has an amazing time, the chances are they lost because it's such a tough game if you don't know what you're doing. In the event that they did win, they probably didn't win enough because the takeout's so high for them to sustain playing more and more and more, learning it, falling in love with it, realizing that's the tip of the iceberg and there's more. I think that's our biggest issue is we do a great job of bringing you. We don't do a great job of keeping you.
That's interesting. I've had this theory, and I want to get your take on this because I want to expound on that a little bit. I've had this theory that as we look at market dynamics and trends in sports betting, and we see just that, these players that are, let's say, 28 to 40 or so, these demographics, right? I'm not seeing those same demographics necessarily translate into horse racing. And I've always said I've had this theory, which is it's the math. And I hate to sound jaded about that, but there's just more math involved in horse racing. And frankly, I can't just look at it and say, because it's pari-mutuel and others, I can't just look at the board and say, okay, I'm going to get paid out this. I know that the Thunder are -9 in your example. And I'm looking at that and I know exactly what I'm going to make. And even if I can't do the math in my head, I can get on my app and it'll immediately tell me if I put $5 in what the payout's going to be. And I just wonder if that's one of the reasons why. And I think you kind of alluded to it a little bit. Frankly, it's a little bit harder, I want to say, to kind of get it, right?
So there's a couple of levels to that. The first thing is like, I don't know if you've ever had a same game parlay, but there's nothing more stressful and annoying than like rooting for one thing and then hoping that something else happens. And then 30 seconds later, I can't win this bet. Oh, he got a rebound. Oh, he didn't get a rebound. Does he get that? What's the score? It's stressful and it's not that much fun. Now, if you play a pick six in racing and you're in between, you go grab a drink. You talk to a nice lady or a nice man and you hang out, you're high-fiving, you're grabbing a drink, you're talking business with someone, whatever it might be, then the next race comes around. It's a much more enjoyable experience. But the problem is, to your point, is because we're a pari-mutuel game, there's no real way to let someone know what they're alive for. A guy can put their $25 into DraftKings or to wherever you want to put it in, and you can do a same game parlay that tells you that if you get it right, you're going to win $987. And that doesn't change. You can play the pick six at a racetrack wherever. You could spend $150 on various combinations of how you want that pick six to go. It could pay $112 and you could lose money, or it could pay $27,000. You don't know. And so that makes it a little bit tricky too. The one other problem that we have in racing that we haven't quite figured out, and I won't rabbit hole you too much about why it's an issue, is we haven't found out how to give a fixed odds wager. And the behind the scenes reasoning is that the Kentucky Derby that ran for $5 million, that purse money is essentially fueled from the takeout from the wagering dollar. So the horsemen, the people that own the horses, that train the horses, they're very protective of that takeout from the wagering dollar. Because if
Sure.
they think in their brains, if the takeout comes down, then their purses come down, and that's problematic for them and their careers and their livelihoods. And so when you want to have a fixed odds wagering market, you cannot operate with a takeout at 20%. It just, it's you can't you don't want to play basketball a basketball game if both teams are -130. It just doesn't you can't it's not a wager that people would do. So what we have to do is get the horsemen to understand that if we can make the game more approachable from a fixed odds standpoint and give some things that are fixed odds with lower takeout, it's going to just rise all the ships. And we've had a hard time in the industry kind of winning that battle, which is why we can't have the great parlay where you put in $25 and you find out what you're going to make at the end.
Right. Well, Brendan, you've got some experience with fixed odds. I know you've worked on this issue
I
a
was going to
long
say
time.
it. No, I was going to say I get the fixed odds argument. It's one that you summarized it really well to be able to do it, and one that obviously kicked in again when sports betting came to fruition over the last few years of how do we do that and pivot in that in a very meaningful way. And it's challenging of getting, everybody's hands in the pot to agree to everything off of that. And I also say that, and I go back to your previous comment about UAE and casinos, which, as everyone knows that listens to this, I've been very involved in that market over time. How does international racing, and I know obviously we're in the US, we're very focused off the Triple Crown and everything else, but how does international, what, they just came off the Dubai Cup. You've got other races that are around the world that are famous off of that. For the average American or those that listen to us from a worldwide perspective, how does international horse racing play into this big scheme of things too? Because obviously the
Yeah.
pool becomes that much more interesting.
Well, the good thing about most international markets is they have civilized countries that allow fixed odds wagering. Whether if you're betting in the UK, you're betting Royal Ascot, you're betting in Australia, you go to your Ladbrokes or whatever, you can walk in, you can get a fixed odds wager down. So they've got that part. But their tote is not nearly as robust as our tote. So there's that as well. I would say that internationally, when it comes to like the UK and Australia, I wouldn't say that American bettors are too involved. I think when it comes to Royal Ascot and things like that, we'll watch, we'll participate for the fact that we might be sending an American horse over there, or the pageantry of it all. The Dubai World Cup and the Saudi Cup, we're not betting like we're betting in the Kentucky Derby, even though it's the richest race in the world, the Saudi Cup at $20 million. Our horses go there now to try to win that money. But the international market that has understood horse racing the best, I think, and has done the best would be Hong Kong. They handle more than we handle, and they run 2 days a week at two different places. They run on Wednesdays and Sundays. That's it. They run at Happy Valley and they run at Sha Tin, and they handle an astronomical amount of money. And we run at, there's probably four races going on while we're speaking right now in this country, and Podunk America here and Podunk America there. So we do, from a betting standpoint, we do it better than most of the world. Hong Kong does it a little bit better, but no one dirt races like we do. And they still all come here to buy a lot of their horses outside of like the UK.
Hong Kong Jockey Club, a place I've always wanted to visit. That one's on my bucket list at some point in time. I told somebody that the other day, and they said, "Why are you in a rush to get there?" And I said, "No, it's just on my bucket list." And the guy said it very witty. The guy said to me, he goes, "Well, good news is you're in good health then. I mean, people that are, trying to hurry up and get their bucket list done, I always worry about their health." And I said, "Oh, that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up." So,
I
on
have
my
a
bucket
real quick
list.
about Hong Kong. One of my good friends, who is a professional player, and when I and I think you guys will respect this, I play a lot, and I am involved a lot, and it has an impact on my family. But I don't feed my family through racing. My friend feeds his family through racing. He pays his insurance through racing. He does it for a living. He basically made an exclusive switch from the U.S. racing to Hong Kong. He found it to be a much better edge over there in terms of the way that he played.
Wow, interesting. Interesting.
Wow. Good little tidbit there.
Well, I've got to ask the question. I mean, we're closing out the show here. This is our Preakness show. You are the handicapper. You got any favorites that you can share with us? Can I ask or no?
Yeah, I don't know who's going to run, unfortunately. We just found out that Sovereignty won't be there. I'd be shocked if Journalism does. We'll see what happens with Journalism. He might show up. If he does, he's definitely the horse to beat. The third place runner, Baeza, has a very conservative trainer that basically, before they even got the horse back to the barn, said, "I'm not running in the Preakness." If Rodriguez shows up, now this is pending a lot of other things. You'll have to check out
Sure.
our podcast if you want to know more details, in themoneypodcast.com if you want to, as an updated thing. But I would say Rodriguez at this point is very interesting. I liked him a little bit in the Derby, but I didn't think he was good enough to beat Sovereignty, Journalism, or Baeza. But now, if he doesn't have to run against them, suddenly he is good enough to win the race. So he's my early one, would be Rodriguez.
Oh, I like that. I was on Rodriguez, of
Okay.
course. See, I should have asked earlier. I asked the wrong questions in the Derby. There we go. Look, JK, again, what's the name of your podcast? Remind our listeners.
Yeah, In the Money Media. So you can just search that, In the Money Media, on YouTube, and then wherever you get your podcasts, there's the audio versions as well.
Well, look, we can't thank you enough. Obviously, follow JK on X. He's always at America's Day at the Races. He's on Fox Sports. He's a great guy, good friend of mine. Thanks so much for joining the show, man. This has been great in coaching us up on the horses.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you all for joining us on another edition of the World Series of Politics.
You've been listening to the World Series of Politics podcast with Brendan Bussman and Brent Eichen. We'll be back at the starting line very soon. This has been an IGB production. For the latest news, views, analysis, and data on the global gaming industry, head to igamingbusiness.com.